Now, you might be thinking by this time that Buddhism and psychoanalysis are practically the same thing. I've had you traverse quite a lot of ground rather rapidly, but I think it should have become clear that there are a number of very important points of resemblance, even coincidence, as between Buddhism and psychoanalysis. So you might have begun to get the impression that they're more or less the same thing. One Eastern, the other Western, one ancient, the other modern, one religious, the other scientific. And this brings us back to the point where we started from. That is to say, back to the people coming to me with problems of various kinds. Now, I've had the experience that some people have come to me after analysis. They come and say that according to the analyst that they've been going to, whether Freudian, Jungian and so on, they are cured. There's nothing wrong with them. They're all right. So you may wonder, well, why do they come along then? And so far as psychoanalysis is concerned, they've got no problems. But they do come along sometimes and they say, well, the analyst says, I'm perfectly all right, there's nothing wrong with me, but I feel terrible. I feel that life is completely empty. I feel that I've got nothing to live for, that life's got no meaning and no purpose. And this makes me feel absolutely awful. So here we begin to come to the crux of the matter, and we begin to become aware of certain limitations of psychoanalysis. We can see these perhaps more clearly if we reverse, or try to reverse, the situation. We've seen just now that people who are cured, so far as psychoanalysis is concerned, may be still not really happy, even not at all happy. But just imagine, say, a Buddhist going to an analyst, not an ex-patient going to, say, a Buddhist monk, but a Buddhist going to an analyst. And the Buddhist says to the analyst, I've got a problem. According to Buddhism, I'm enlightened. I've gained nirvana. I've got full wisdom and compassion. I'm a real life bodhisattva. I've got everything. But life is so empty. I've nothing to live for. Well, the mere idea is absurd. One can see that immediately. Of course, the analyst may not let us get away with this so easily. The analyst may say, well, if anyone comes to you after analysis saying he or she isn't happy, then they're not really cured. Maybe they don't want to adjust. Maybe further analysis is required. But this indicates, to my mind, a certain rather great weakness in psychoanalysis, at least in many of its forms, this tendency to think of cure or the return to health or normality in terms of adjustment to existing conditions. There's a tendency among many psychoanalysts to think, well, if you're disturbed or neurotic or unbalanced, they give you a few sessions, and what is the criterion that you're cured? That you can go back to your job and work there happily and commute back and forth every day and take out a mortgage and get a house. That's a sure sign that you're cured, that there's nothing wrong with you. Return to normality, adjustment to the status quo. So there's a very great tendency among many psychoanalysts to think of the cure in terms of enabling you to carry on within the existing setup. In other words, this sort of psychoanalysis tends to perpetuate the status quo. They help you to adjust to the existing order of things, regardless of whether that order is good or bad or indifferent. Now, some psychoanalysts are perfectly aware of this danger. It is true, of course, that any given person's lack of adjustment may be due to truly neurotic causes. It may be that you can't carry on with your work, you can't settle down, get married, have children, all the rest of it, because you are neurotic. But there's also another way of looking at it, which may be true in certain other cases. In many cases, we find that when the neurosis is removed, the person readjusts quite happily. But sometimes the person, as it were, refuses to adjust. It's as though they're rebelling. And this sort of neurosis, we may say, can be fundamentally quite healthy. It's not that the person is neurotic. The fault may lie, not with the individual at all, but with the conditions in the midst of which he lives, including himself as he is at present. So we do sometimes find, and as I've said, this is beginning to be recognized by at least some psychoanalysts, that many examples of so-called neurosis, or even quite severe mental disturbance, are not really neurosis to be cured so that one can adjust, but quite healthy symptoms of rebellion against a social order and setup which itself is fundamentally unhealthy. In other words, the roles are reversed. Not that the individual is unhealthy because he won't fit into the healthy society, but the individual is healthy and refuses to fit into the unhealthy society. So this particular fact, some psychoanalysts are beginning to be aware of. So this goes to show that psychoanalysis as a whole will have to deepen its understanding of man. Will have to enlarge its conception of his potentialities, not think that the aim and object of human existence is to adjust to the existing social order, but to think that man, or to realize that man has got many capacities and potentialities which cannot be satisfied by the existing order, the existing setup, so that what really needs to be done is that the existing order, the existing setup, has rather to be changed so that a healthy person can live in a healthy environment. So psychoanalysis has to take note of these greater potentialities of man, which it does not always tend to do at present, and in taking them into consideration and enlarging its conception, it can certainly take the help of a non-theistic religion like Buddhism. As I've shown, or tried to show, there are many similarities as between Buddhism on the one hand and psychoanalysis on the other. And there's no reason, therefore, why the two should not cooperate, where they can cooperate, each benefiting the other and both contributing to the advancement of the human race and the greater happiness in all respects of mankind.